Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and this is the first time I've ever done this, Nate. It's just you and I.
Done what? The podcast?
No, I am back, but this is just you and I. I don't think you and I have ever done a podcast just us.
I don't think, maybe a race analysis? I don't think so, though. And also, there's not even Maxine, producer Maxine, to help us in this thing at the same time.
Yeah, I'm producing right now, too. So if everything comes crashing and burning down, patience.
Wait, you were gone. What were you doing?
Yeah, I had a baby, and my goodness. Dude, it's hard. I forgot. Like, you kind of get, like, Men in Black penned. You're in such a fog when you have a baby. Parents can relate to this. Like, you forget how rough it is when, like, you've got a brand new baby that just cries and doesn't want to sleep.
It's like Leadville or marathons.
Yeah, yeah.
You have the next one once you forget about how hard it was. And then you say, oh, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. So, yeah. Yeah.
What's your experience been like so far?
So she's a pretty darn good baby, but recently she's just been like waking up more and more. That's how babies work, right? Like when they're first
born. Call her a bad baby. I think that's what you want to do. Just kidding. There's no bad babies or bad dogs.
Yes, that's the truth. But you know how it is, right, Nate? Like when they're first born, they just sleep a lot. And
22 hours a day.
Yeah. And then you get to they start to wake up more and more and more, which is exciting because then maybe they'll start to smile or they'll start to like giggle or coo or do something like that. But at the same time, they're also very, her in particular, her digestive system doesn't work very well. Poor thing. She's always gassy or upset in one way or another. So
yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's how it goes.
But to you, what that happens is you don't get a lot of sleep in a row, or how does that work?
Yeah.
How do you handle the nights? Because parents always wonder this, is you have a new kid and I'll honestly, for like 3 years, your sleep's interrupted depending on if you lock him in the room at night and all. Just kidding. but it doesn't matter where they sleep and stuff. Actually lock my son in his room, I think about 1.5, because we did the Montessori style with just a bed on the ground. So he didn't have a crib and could go around and everything was childproof in the room. Yeah. But if we didn't do that, he would walk into the middle of the house just at night. I got up at like 2 a.m. to get something in the kitchen. And he was just standing in the corner, like children of the corn. Yeah, like not even a regular corner, just like a corner that no one should stand in. And just sitting there at 2 a.m. And that still to this day scares me thinking about it. How high I jumped to see a little creepy kid looking at me. I know, it was extra small too. So maybe they went one because of standing, but you know, just very small. So how do you manage, or how has it been?
Yeah, so on like the really tough nights when she just won't sleep and she really needs help. There's two different kinds. There's when they won't sleep because they need help and they need something done, whether it's simple, it's feeding, diaper change, or to be burped. That's kind of like the three main needs, you know? And I know that this is the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast, but parents, there's a lot of you listening to this or soon to be parents. And I'm sure that this is helpful. So in those situations, you do what you can, but then sometimes they just want to cry. And when they just want to cry, so typically what I do is I take her out of the room because she's sleeping like in her own little like bassinet that's in our room, or she's sleeping in her room, depending on her needs. So I'll take her out of the room, but she doesn't want me in the middle of the night. She just wants her mom, right? So, but I'm there and I just do what I can to support Sarah, and I can't sleep through it. If I put earplugs in, I'll feel like a terrible person. You know what I mean? Like there's,
you're not though.
I know, but you know what I mean?
You feel guilty because your child is crying out for help. Yep. Right. And you can physically help, but
and your partner's taking care of it. And you just feel like, man, what am I doing here? You know, but the thing is, you can't do anything direct with the child many times because they just need their mom. So, you know, that's just how it goes.
Do you ever do that early on where like you both wake up and are like trying to make the baby quiet? And then after a while, you're like, one of us needs to sleep.
Yes.
We can switch off. Another thing too for dads, it's very common for, especially the early times, the kid to want the mom more, but that does change over time. Just keep showing up. And then there's a very special, it's not going to be like that forever.
I think it took like maybe 6 months, maybe 9 months, somewhere around there before I really started to feel like I connected, in quotes, with Simon. At first I just didn't have that same connection that the mom has, and that's normal. You'd like Nate said, you just have to keep showing up. Can I talk about my training though, amidst this?
Yeah. How do you do training for triathlon? Cause I remember, I love this clip. I should save it so I can put it up. About what is it? 6 years ago? How old Simon?
6 years.
Yeah. 6 years ago, Jonathan's like, okay, so Simon's being born and I'm going to train 3 times a day for like 45 minutes in between naps, like put them in a pack and play. And I'm just going to do an interval and then 2 easy things. And I think that worked. I think you did it one day.
Yeah. Yeah. One day. And it didn't work well even on one day. Yeah.
Through your bike. Yeah.
He was also like way too interested of some kids. You can put them in a pack and play like later on, you know, and they're fine hanging out in there. Simon just wants to be doing whatever you're doing. Like he's really interested and involved. And it's way too dangerous to have them buy a trainer and a bike or something like that if he wants to be involved. So every kid will be different for sure.
I have a story on that.
Yeah.
Like, okay, way back in the day, before the Kicker came out, I met with Wahoo Fitness in like the basement of Interbike. They had bought a keg to get people to come and see their heart rate straps. And this is like the first, or I think maybe the first year. This is the year I met DC Rainmaker in two, and we were in the Ant booth, and that's how we showed Trainer Road. There's like an article about it a long time ago.
Yeah, on Ray's site, I think you can see it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like exactly.
The first bit of press Trainer Road got.
And my daughter was just born, and I remember back in those days, I had a Kirk Kinetic trainer and had a rear wheel with spokes, right? And I was scared to death that my kid would, you know, put a finger in there or something. And even if they were in the same room and they were designing the Kicker, and I was like, you need some kind of indication to show that it's spinning versus not spinning, because kids won't be able to tell. And they made those little like chevrons on it.
Yeah.
In response to that, I wish they would have done a little like the German planes where you could spin it, where it's not the same pattern. So you can tell it's like moving. Because now it just blurs if it happens. But anyways, that's why those things are on there, because of that conversation. That's what they told me in that Interbike thing, so that kids will be less likely to touch it or know that it's spinning different than still.
Yeah.
I think, you know, at really young ages, you can't tell, but that's where that came from.
That's interesting. Yeah. So like leading into the triathlon, I hate feeling like training is at odds with my family and pulls me away from my family. Because then the very thing that would give me relief, which is riding my bike or running or swimming, it doesn't give me relief. It just piles it on. So I put it in a very, very, very distant, you know, second or third place training to my family. And as a result, I didn't get much training in, and I also didn't force myself into too much structure as well. Instead, sometimes I was just like, I just need to feel wind on my face, you know what I mean? Or just like enjoy riding my bike or enjoy the feeling of running or movement. And I let myself do that. So I feel like you just have to give yourself the license to be able to break free a bit and to be able to do what you need to find balance. And for me, that's how I found balance with it. So right now I haven't been doing structure. I've been getting out for rides occasionally, and they're very much like soul rides, I would say, in the sense that like I'm going out just to get something and rebalance myself chemically, you know, and get that from it. And that's okay. And I'm still, you know, I'm not worried about fitness, because I know that if I'm doing these little things, like a little strength workout every day, short run, maybe I can go and swim at the pool with Simon, or maybe I can go for a short ride, something like that. When I can do those things, I know that that helps my body and that keeps me healthy, you know, just mentally and physically. So,
and on that, like, so both parents need a break. That doesn't make you a not loving parent. Because two of those early days, actually, even now, my kids are 11 and 7. It's the variable, like, you never know how long it's going to be that you're going to sit down and do something, which makes it very hard to actually relax until you get out of the house and know that somebody else is caring. And even if you're there, John, what you said is that you hear it. You even said yesterday, you're like, I came to the office because I can work at home, but if I hear my daughter crying a lot, I want to go help her.
Yes.
And what can often happen too is, you know, both, if there's one parent doing more of the caregiving, another parent's working, you know, the parent who's working is tired too, but it's not the same stress. Like, I've had very stressful times at Trainer Road, but like caring for little babies are hard.
Very hard.
So like having that kind of switch off too. And also it's fun. Actually, work all day with adults and then you get to be a little goo goo gaga.
Yeah.
And the opposite's fun too. If you're goo goo gaga all day and then you get like an hour with adults or an hour run, running with a newborn, they're too small at first to be in the
jogging strollers.
Exactly. And too much shaking and stuff like that. Thule has that like chariot style one. I think Chariot was the last brand. And they have actually a sling that you can put in. It's like a hammock. And they say, I think it's like at 6 months or a year, you can start doing that.
Yeah.
But that's a great, if you're a triathlete, like a double jog stroller or a double bob stroller, and then or the chariot too. I like the Bob more for running, but go for an hour run. You'd be a hero, right? And then stop at the park.
Yes, it's perfect. And pair that with your, like, with your long run, maybe that's lower on pace. That's not going to have you trying to adhere to structure or anything like that.
Yeah. That you can stop for snacks.
Great. Yes, exactly.
And like look at ducks and stuff and like, let's stop at the pond. It doesn't, you're going to be okay. You don't need to continuously run that whole time. Don't, it'd be much, because sometimes kids have problems being in those strollers the whole time. On the opposite side, they're sleeping. You're like, get an extra mile or two in.
Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. I've seen there's like a brace that you can wear and then you can hook yourself to that chariot. So then you're running in front of your kids and pulling your kids, which is
I've
crazy.
Seen that too.
I've never seen.
So the chariot has, so I had a Bob. Mm-hmm. This is the dad cast, but this relates to 20% triathletes listen to this. Sorry, cyclists. Yeah. But someday you'll want to, this is actually cross training for cyclists because you can't go out for 2 hour rides very often when you're newborn.
Oh, yeah.
But to stay fit and go for a 30-minute run, possible. So there's two Bobs. I had a single and a double. And then I also had the chariot. In the chariot, I had the ski attachment, the running attachment, the rickshaw. Yeah, rickshaw ski one. And what the issue what I have with that one is the running attachment, it's a single wheel in the front that's fixed. And if you're going straight, it's fine. And you have to actually balance it with like you have to get the wheel just and right, or else you're always kind of fighting it.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard to run, to do any kind of turns. You got to pick it up. So even with that thing on your chest, it's a little bit hard. But the Bob, you can either lock it or be free. I always ran free. And it's very, very easy to, you know, I've done, probably 20-mile runs with that thing. And I was good.
Heck yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's good, man. It's like his parents will know that are listening to this. It puts a lot of things in perspective. That's for sure. Like your training is important to you and it needs to be important to you. And when I say put things in perspective, I don't mean take whatever is important to you now and remove it. No, it shows you that, my training or my physical activity actually is important to me. And I need to modify it, but I don't need to let go of it. My time with me and my partner, that's important. And we need to make sure we don't let go of it. It's just going to change. And so it's like a reshuffling time. Right. In your life where priorities just change and then you have be willing to adapt.
I just, I went on hold both times and my FTP went from like 300 to 180. Yeah. It was awesome.
You survived to live the tale. You're fine.
Exactly. Another pro tip though, with the Bob, you can, on the handlebar, they have an attachment that you can put a water bottle on. So we have like two attachments right there. So instead of having to reach down, you could have like two cycling bottles right there on your, where you push. So if you're doing a long run, you can have all your nutrition and water right there without having this like
easy,
you know, reach down low. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good tip. So things are good. I'm excited to be back. I want to mention really quickly that we're hiring a data engineer. You can do that. Go to trainroad.com/jobs and you can check that out.
Nate, I have an update. Something?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Workout levels of V2.
Ooh.
So this is very exciting. So I was telling everyone we're in the data analysis, like data validation. So what workouts level V2 is, we have updated how we score workouts, right? And before it was just indoor, and we had to make a change where now you can get points for multiple energy systems. So if you do threshold, 2x20 threshold, and then you ride for 2 hours endurance, you'll get 2 hours endurance and the threshold points, and they relate to each other too. And the way that we built this is based on like a whole bunch of data, because we have 145 million workouts in our system. I don't think people know that.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Like, it's a massive amount.
And of course, a huge part of this too, and the data engineering job, is how do you clean that data up? You got to take out outliers and make sure that things follow the right case. But luckily, when we pare things down, we still have millions and millions and millions and plenty of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So what we wanted to see is one fear would be that when we score things, that someone would do a ride outside, they would score level 8 threshold. Then they would come inside and they would do like a level 6 and fail or something like that, because some kind of relationship between, maybe they could do a higher outside than inside or something like that. Mm-hmm. That was the fear. And so I want to make sure that didn't happen. And what we did is we went back in time. So we have, you know, over a decade of data. We went through, we scored all these people's workouts. And as you step through the data, we said, okay, if someone raised their level outside, so let's say they went from a 6 to a 7 outside, And now in the next 2 weeks, inside, they did a progressive workout. So something between a 7 and 8 of threshold. What was their failure rate? Like, did these people have problems or did they pass these workouts? And so we did that all with outside as the one that progressed, or as the first workout, and the next workout that was harder would be an inside. And then we did the same thing with inside to inside. And we looked at those two and see what is the failure rate between those two. Like, what kind of issues were people having where it was too intense for them? Or they ended it early. And, you know, we looked at both. We have different types of failures where some of them we don't really know. We call them soft failures, or if it's like it was just too intense, that's, we call that a hard failure. And we looked at that, and we looked at it per energy system, and then over different, like, other different things that I may or may not share later, which I can't remember. That's why I'm not sharing.
We are live.
Yeah. So what happened is that it was the basically the same rate. And with statistics and stuff, it was close enough where I forgot the measurement, but basically there's no difference. Mm-hmm. So this is really cool. And we do some really awesome things to look at your outside workouts and compare them inside and do any adjustments that's needed for someone's history so that this is not an issue. But we did that technique, and then afterwards we validated it and it was the same. So now I'm super pumped. And what we're doing now is we're going to release it to a private, like, small group of people. So you should do things. They're going to test it, and then we'll have early access in it. Mm-hmm. And what we're waiting for right now is just some small UI tweaks so that you can see these workout levels. It's been a long time. It was so exciting to be in the meeting with, like, a data scientist and, you know, all the mm-hmm. statistics and stuff, and going through, and it's like, yes, yes, yes. It was many, many, many meetings of just question after question. It wasn't that it was wrong, but we'd see some stuff and go, okay, now what's answers lead to more questions.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So what if this case, because we the worst case would be is we released it and everyone's levels went too high outside. But honestly, John, this brings to another point. So the same system is measured inside and outside. Mm-hmm. But what happens is outside, you might have a very high intensity factor, but because of the way you're putting out power, you're not getting a huge training effect.
Yes. And I've noticed this.
Yeah.
Cause I've been, so it's been evolving, as you mentioned, right? Like, we're constantly mm-hmm. evolving and tweaking this, but I've been, for the past maybe 9 months now, I've been looking at what's the analysis of the outside ride. And I do a lot of my outside workouts. And if you go to my Strava, you can see I'm really good at executing my intervals, like, with exact precision, rests, everything else. We have great roads here, but I'm also darn good at it too. I'll pat myself on the back for it. So it's really cool because then I can see, well, this is supposed to be a level 5 threshold. And when I was outside, I did it to the T, like, perfect, to the second, everything was matched. It should be a level 5. So it's been cool to see that. And then to do a crit and to think, man, I am so exhausted after that crit. I bet I got so much credit for that. And then I look at it and it actually didn't give me good training effect. And there's a difference here. We have to decouple hard from productive. Those are two very different things. And mm-hmm. that's why coaching passes you through structured training that is going to have you do intervals at specific intensities for specific durations, because unique and special things happen when you're at that intensity for that duration. And when you do interval workouts, it lets you spend more time at that duration than you would otherwise be able to do, because it's strategic and planned out. In a race, that doesn't happen. You're just throwing power at the wall. You may even get PRs, but those PRs don't equate to you having a really good training effect from that race for your threshold or VO2 or endurance or something else. And that's something that's going to be hard for athletes to understand. It's something that the best coaches in the world absolutely understand. That's why they're not just having their athletes race every day, right? Otherwise, they would just have them race every day. But instead,
exactly, yeah.
It's race rarely, train consistently. So in that respect, it's really cool to quantify something that the best coaches in the world know, that just throwing things at the wall and riding as hard as you can willy-nilly doesn't necessarily make you faster. Instead, it's structure that does it.
Or the best AIs know too.
Yeah, but that's the truth.
If you're right, because what pro teams would do then is on all their training days, they would just have races. They just race each other.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I think everyone's experienced this too, where they're in a group. You've done group rides, like, right? Like twice a week forever. And then you come in and you do like you join train a row and you do structured intervals and you immediately get stronger. And then you go back to the group ride. Everyone's like, well, are you on the juice? What's going on?
Exactly. And, yep.
And you beat everyone. So I just want to, I'm going to say this many more times, but what people, I've looked at some of my races too. And I look back at them like, man, I got 100 TSS there, but it was a level 3 VO2 max. When I was really inside the next week, I did a level 7 inside. And although it was hard and TSS is a great way to show that you got tired mm-hmm. for sure. And I did get tired in that race. I didn't necessarily though progressively increase my power so that I then recover and get faster and faster and faster.
Totally.
Big difference. And it's going to, I know we're going to have people, people are going to be physically upset because again, it's the same system inside and outside. Mm-hmm. People will be physically upset because, they went really hard. You didn't score a lot. And that's going to, mm-hmm. that might bum you out for a second, right? Like yeah. I tried so hard, but again, if you add structure and, intervals and consistency and stuff like that, and even like little small breaks outside, that can lower your numbers a lot too, because you think about inside ride 2x20, you take a 5 second stop every 5 minutes. It's way easier than doing sustain the whole time.
Oh yeah.
And those we take that into account and stuff.
Make a yeah. difference, especially depending on the type of work you're doing. I know that Keegan's coach, Jim, hates coffee stops. Like he's like, if I go and, cause Keegan's been doing those huge, you know, big days for Unbound, that sort of stuff. And he's like, when I've got a 2 hour block of just doing, you know, end plus, so just like tempo, and you're just riding tempo, or you're supposed to be riding sweet spot for 40 minutes. And then you're supposed to take a specific break. Like, don't stop at the gas station, like carry on and stick to the structure, because he's trying to get something very specific to happen. If it's lower intensity. Who, yeah, sure. You know, but
who is Keegan for those who are new? Cause people might not know.
It's true. Yeah. People join every week. Keegan Swenson rides for Santa Cruz. He got second at Unbound this year, won Leadville, won Steamboat. He's won everything else he's raced, I think. So he's the best. I think he's the best off-road cyclist in the country. In the USA, he's the current cross country national champion too.
Multiple Leadville winner.
I'm comfortable considering him as the best cyclist in the US as well. I don't know, but he's very, very good. So
he won Leadville, and the next day he just did this twice in a year or twice in a row. Yeah. Tell what did he race the next day after Leadville? And so yeah. those are not, Leadville's 100-mile mountain bike race at
104 average elevation, 10,000 feet. And then you climb up to almost 14, I think, something like that. It's really hard. And then he wins that by 10 minutes, something like that. I could be wrong. And then after that, he goes and races Steamboat Gravel, which is 140 miles and also at high elevation, I think like around 8,000 or 9,000. Yep, the next morning.
The next morning.
And there were people that were totally fresh. Then he absolutely beat them. And go back and listen to the podcast that Nate, you did a fantastic job with Hannah and Keegan on letting them talk to each other about their wins. That was fascinating. That was like so cool.
I had two Leadville winners on at once. It was amazing.
Pretty great, huh?
So and what was last year? He did another one too. What was it called?
Breck Epic. 6 day stage race that started the next day. Yeah, insane. So he's proving can we talk about this really quick? I want to hear your thoughts on whether, because America needs, like, we want cyclists to be at the front. We have Sepp Kuss, who does an incredible job as a super domestique when he's, you know, pushing up the mountains. We had Quinn Simmons this year, who started doing extremely well. We have Mateo Jorgensen, who we had on the podcast last week. Incredible episode, if you haven't listened to it. Mateo Jorgensen doing great in breakaways. But we had Lance Armstrong, and we had, like, all these other riders. We want to have riders up at the top, right?
Lance, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Slightly controversial.
Yeah, a bit. So I'm curious to hear if people listening to this, if you're watching YouTube right now or in the live chat, let us know if you think Keegan could be successful at the world tour level. Nate, you know Keegan well. You know the sort of rider he is, everything else. Do you think he could be successful? And to be clear, I don't know if teams are reaching out to him. I know he is in a contract here, so maybe teams, if you're listening to this, might want to reach out to him. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think he could do well at world tour level?
I think that, so Keegan's raced world cups, right? Mountain bikes, which is that level. And he is not as good at short, like 1 hour power. Mm-hmm. Keegan's specialty is sweet spot all day. Mm-hmm. And Side note, he trained Speed Spot, just so you know.
A lot.
A lot. Because some people would say that, you know, that's not possible. But
right. It bucks the polarized thing, right? Right there. It's like an example of going against it. So
I'm not saying polarized bad. I'm just saying there.
Yeah.
Keegan does Sweet Spot and wins lots of these races and destroys people.
For sure.
So he's good at that. He's got really good grit. He's really good at eating. Mm-hmm. And he has extreme technical ability. Like all those things, and obviously recovers well day to day.
And so somebody's Keegan, asking actually really quick. Sorry. Somebody's asking, why doesn't he ever race UCI World Cups? He did for maybe like 8 years, 9 years, 10 years. He was really good at the junior ranks. I think he like was podium at like world champs level, maybe, or World Cup overall. Like he was at the level of winning races as a junior. U23s, he did well once he, and then, but at elites, like a different level. It's pretty different to his physiology, like Nate's saying. Like he's, those are really punchy, really difficult. I think his best result is 14th in a World Cup, which is darn good. Keep in mind, these are fields of like 200 and these athletes are so specifically trained. So for the physiology that he has, I'm honestly like pretty impressed that he gets a 14th because we're seeing what he's best at, which is like these Leadville sort of days. You know,
and the start position matters a whole bunch in those.
Look at
and
Tom that's Pidcock. Even more. He this year at World Champs, he started from the third row. You'd think Tom Pidcock can do that. And I'm sure he was tired after La Tour de France, but still he started the third row. And by the time he caught up to Nino, he was completely gassed and had nothing for him. And he blew up. Yeah. Like that shows that even an athlete at that level, starting from the third row, not the eighth row, not the ninth row, but the third row, an athlete of that caliber, still it shows how difficult it is to move up and how much energy you have to waste as you move through the field like that.
That was exactly my point. So even with 14th, because he moved up so much in that race, that you have to put out so much more power and energy than the winners. But I was telling Keegan, actually, I was telling Keegan, stop that. Do these things, clean up on these long races. That's the trend and stuff too. And become an icon in that rather than, you know, I mean, 14th at World Cup is amazing, but do what your strength is. And so anyways, because of that, I don't know about like the World Tour best climbers will outclimb Keegan, right?
Yeah. I'm sure like you look at Tadej Pogacar and the numbers that those guys put out, it's insane. They're climbing at 7 watts per kilo. Like,
yeah,
it's insane. Yeah.
And, but those are also for less time than what Keegan does too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Keegan just goes, whatever his sweet spot is for like, I'll just do it for 6 hours in a row. Combined with his technical ability gets him like, you know, better than everyone else.
And his so weight, he's like 140 pounds. So like, what is that? Mm-hmm. 65 kilos, somewhere around there. That's like, and I think he's kind of unique because like Sepp Kuss almost seems like he's most effective when it's steeper. And that's why they position him late. So he's almost like the last man standing before their GC rider. And I feel like Keegan could probably hang, maybe not quite on Sepp's level there, but maybe he could. But everything before then, he could really be really effective. He's, you know, with a 400 watt FTP, he can do just fine in flats with 400 watt FTP. And then once it goes up, you know, his power to weight ratio is so darn good. And I've looked at power files of World Tour riders in the Tour de France and then looked at power files of Keegan's, and he's absolutely like there, if not better in many cases than the big performances that you see even in 1 day races when they're fresh. So he's got the power to do it. I do wonder if like just getting used to racing in Europe, we've heard a lot. Matteo talked about that last week about how different it is. Like it's a totally different ball game. And it was really cool to hear Matteo actually break it down instead of just say it's hard. Like we've heard from so many athletes, he broke down exactly why. So that's my only, like, that's the only question mark, but man, I think he could be a really valuable asset to a world tour team. If that world tour team, like 1 day classics, Strade Bianchi, I feel like that would be amazing for him. Even something like Flanders could be good. I mean,
yeah, see, maybe too light for that, but maybe not. But yeah. those huge, gritty, horrible days. Yeah. Like that's even, you put Keegan in.
Even weird as it sounds, Roubaix might be good, right? Because of that, because same. He knows how to be so smooth in rough stuff and pick
exactly.
The lines.
And how long is Roubaix? Isn't it like 7 hours?
Yeah, it's a long day. It's like 6 hours for those guys. Five, six
hours. Yeah, exactly.
Hours.
Technical, like muddy. That's a Keegan thing. Hide in there. And then it's too, just, it kind of like just falls apart, right? Like apart and apart. That is the kind of thing. It would not be a like, okay, we're just going to chill and then do this 20-minute climb as hard as we can. Mm-hmm. That would not be the kind of race I would put him in. But anyways, it'd be really cool, but you're right. Like going over to Europe and doing that stuff, I feel like you have to fit in their system. Mm-hmm. And if you don't fit, you go. It's not like less of like, let's look at individual athletes. Maybe some teams are now, but it's much more of like, this is the system and you do it.
Yeah. A very different ball game to going out there and winning for yourself. How he's currently racing, you know. It'd be interesting to see. Somebody's also asking in the chat if Sepp Kuss is a mountain biker, and yes, he was, and it was Keegan Swenson, Howard Grotz, and Sepp Kuss. Those three just dominated juniors forever. Sepp is an incredible mountain biker too, a really good cross country racer. So it's pretty cool to see. Go ahead.
Please. Aaron asked, is there an anti-doping testing at things like Leadville? The Lance comment got me thinking about it. Yes, absolutely. And Keegan goes right in from afterwards to anti-doping.
Thanks to and the he Lifetime gets tested Grand Prix
too, outside, right?
Yep. Lifetime Grand Prix is the one that is paying for testing to happen, which I think is super cool because a lot of other gravel stuff, they would never even think to do that. And it's really good that they're doing it. He's been tested after, I think, every one of the events. And then they're still out of competition testing and all that stuff that goes on too. So, Science of Getting Faster podcast with Dr. Tim Podlegar. We also recorded another episode that's going to be coming up soon. We have three more scheduled and it's exciting. That one's kicking off. Sarah is just doing a fantastic job with that. So if you haven't listened, go check it out. And also I want to wish get well soon to Hannah, Finchamp. She crashed at the World Cup and got a concussion. Super rough. Talk about, and she mentioned this on Instagram, but talk about highs of highs and lows of lows. Winning Leadville and then, you know, concussion at a World Cup shortly thereafter. But Hannah, we're here supporting you, all the listeners and everybody else. So, Nate, can I share some thoughts on the podcast while I was gone?
Nope.
I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. Episode 375, Chad, he's not here with us today, but Chad, well done on leading the episode and doing the deep dives. Cause as the person that's hosting, you're always really conscious of the fact that you're probably feel like you're monologuing to the audience and you hope that you're not stretching on too long. And that can be really difficult. And Chad did a good job. That's a hard burden to carry. So well done, Chad. Ivy did an incredible job. I think that we were blown up on all avenues. Everyone was like, Ivy's great. And I don't want to put more on Ivy's plate because Ivy's a community manager with a lot to do with her normal role. But I think it'd be great to have Ivy host every once in a while. I think that she does a really good job. So it'd be great. She mentioned workout compliance issues that athletes have when they train outside. But this is really common and not unique to Trainer Road. Like if you ask any coach, like the athletes that actually the percentage of athletes that complete the workout as prescribed is extremely low, even though the athlete might actually feel like they nailed it and they did it just as it was prescribed. When you're inside and you have a smart trainer that takes care of it for you, it's amazing. Or even when you're inside, you just don't have the variables, you can really hit your marks.
I wouldn't say extremely low. And I don't think we've done the analysis to actually see if they link those two rides, what the score is outside and inside to see what the difference is. But that'd be very interesting.
I want to do this.
See what planned versus actual is, indoor versus outdoor.
Yes.
Yeah.
From firsthand experience, from what I've seen, looking at lots of different athletes stuff, they feel like, hey, I nailed it. But then you look back at it and you're like, no, like your NP was on, but your average, like you're using NP to try to pace, you know, an interval and your average power is really far off and you were just surging and all over the place. It's really common, but I would call it like I think the real problem is adherence dissonance. It's just, we as athletes need to be aware of when we're not following the workout as prescribed. And Nate has mentioned this multiple times. If you're doing a workout outside and you have to hold 200 watts for an interval, if you start out and it says 180 watts, don't ride at 220 watts for a while to drag that average up to 200. Just ride at 200 and do as much time as you can at 200. Your goal is to be at 200 for every second of that interval. So just focus on that. And if that's your goal, you do so much better with pacing things. And also I recommend if you're riding outside, smooth your power more than you do inside. Because that will stop you from just chasing the ball constantly north and south of your power target. I do 10-second smoothing on my head unit when I'm outside.
Wow.
with my workouts, and it works fantastic. Unless I'm doing like, you know, 10 second intervals, but I've never done 10 second intervals, but it works really, really well when you have that 10 second smoothing, because then it stops you from chasing the ball all the time. And then you're just, and when you look back, you're like, wow, I was really smooth because my power was smooth and I wasn't freaking out about chasing the target, you know, up and down the whole time. So anyways, I think that's really important. The other thing I want to comment on too, Nate, I already said this, you did incredibly well with the podcast with Keegan and Hannah. That was episode 377. I think everyone should go listen to that. Now, Xterra Lake Tahoe, I want to like add some more context since I wasn't there. So starting in the front, Nate, you said that was not a great idea because I would get swam over. People would swim over the top of me and that would be chaotic.
And you're scared of swimming and you don't like to swim and you're not a very good swimmer.
Yeah. So starting at the front was actually really good. And I lined up at the edge of the field rather than lining up in the middle, just so then that way I wouldn't get swam over. I never got swam over. The only time that happened, ironically, was when we merged back in with a sprint group. And this is the important part. The first lap was relatively chill. I only had to stop once because I just got kicked in the jaw. And then when I got kicked in the jaw, it made me breathe in a bunch of water. So then I just like tread for a little bit, caught my breath, and then kept going. The second lap, the way that it worked is that you jumped back into the, it was a short beach run, and then you jumped back into the water and you merged in with the start path. And because I'm a slow swimmer, I merged in and there were a lot of other people with me. But still, we merged in with all the sprint, aqua bike, aquathon, duathlon, relay, all those other people. They had you could race it in a ton of different ways. So
okay, duathlons runs bike run.
Yeah, something like that. Yes, yeah. You know what I mean. They had all the variants.
Okay, all the variants.
and we merged in with them, and that's when it got 100% chaotic, because when our paths merged in there. I'm a bad swimmer, but there were also a lot of other bad swimmers and they were truly panicking. Like I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned, but at one point I took 5 strokes underwater, being pulled underwater from a person that was just like gripped extremely tight on my leg. And I was like, I don't want to kick him off because that could hurt. But then at some point I was
like,
I got to kick him off. I got to do that. And then so that happened 4 different times in different scenarios. One of them, a person when we were merging in, they were kind of panicking and I could see them off like my shoulder. And I was like, okay, well, they're not swimming into me and I'm carrying a faster pace than them. So I should be just fine. But right then they like took a 90 degree turn and their arm went over my head. And it was like a UFC chokehold with like my arm and my neck. And they just like locked up. They, you know, it wasn't intentional. They're just panicking.
Yeah.
But I was getting choked out.
So crazy.
Yeah. So that's why it was like pretty brutal. And the whole time I was trying to be present and kind of stand outside of myself and look at the bigger picture and just be like, no, you're fine. Like you're getting through it. Just take time. It was just lots of choking on water and dealing with the craziness. When I got out of the water, the feeling that I had was, Nate, you know, when you almost get in a car accident and you like slam on the brakes and then your body has that terrible feeling afterward, or maybe even get in a car accident, like just.
It's the adrenaline down. Yeah. Like
I had that
adrenaline let down.
I had that for like 30 minutes after the swim, just rough to deal with. And then
do you feel drained?
Oh yeah. Emotionally. Yeah. So I was really trying to decouple that too. And like, let it be what it is, feel it, recognize it, let it sit. But at the same time, then know that like, hey, but you're great at riding bikes and you just stay within yourself and make sure that, you know, you're just executing within your means. And it worked out. But, T1 was just like a conga line. By the time I got out of the water, there were so many athletes that you were just like sardines. I just couldn't get, you know, it was super. That's why one of the reasons why it was super slow. I didn't expect to get dizzy. I got vertigo. Like when I was trying to take my wetsuit off, nearly fell over.
Yeah. That can happen with water in your ears. So put earplugs in. That's very common.
Yeah, I'm going to do that now. That's a good tip because it was shocking. And then the other thing somebody told me, line your bike up because you put your bike on these hangers. You put the saddle on like a bar and they have A-frames on the end of that bar. And they said, put your bike close to one of those, but give yourself just enough room so that somebody can't fit a bike there, but you can put your stuff there. And that would be like a good spot to be able to put your bikes. Then that way you have some space. Well, that did not work. There were like 3 bikes packed in. My stuff was moved. It was like really chaotic, you know? So that was a little tricky. And then
I want to say something about that. I have still to this day, anxiety dreams about coming into T1, not being able to find my bike. Yeah. That is, especially at the bigger races, it's extremely hard. Or that my tires aren't pumped up and everyone's mm-hmm. going.
Yeah, for sure.
Two, with that, when I said kick them off, I want to say, give context to that. If you're like an Amber and you're a very good swimmer and someone grabs you and it's annoying, don't kick them off. Yeah. But if it's jeopardizing your safety and you're getting pulled underwater, like John's experience, then like kick them off. You don't need to like kick him in the face, but you can shake your legs, get it off there. Very different things between someone being annoying and someone threatening your safety. And if it's threatening your safety, they're not going to swim either if they're holding on to you. They need to get their hand off you also. Don't try to knock them out or something like that. But I mean, I've seen it too, where people go, they're annoyed, so they hit back. That's not good. I mean, you could probably just hang on to Amber's foot the whole time and she would be fine. Right. Probably would have swam faster. Yeah. So it's a little context around this. Everyone just doesn't start hitting each other as soon as they touch each other.
Yeah. Right, great point. Yeah. Really good point. So, there's some confusion also with like a drop bag because T1 is in a different spot than T2, but that made it kind of slow. But the other thing on the descent, it was still really physically active on that descent. So like the reason that my legs cramped wasn't because they were just like passive long descent and then suddenly active. There's a lot of pedaling and then even rolling in, it was on the road for a while. So I was able to pedal in. That dropper post was clutch. I think it probably lost me a total of probably 15 or 20 seconds on the climb. I bet it slowed me down, just because of the weight. And I guarantee you it saved me way more than that when you look at the fact that I was able to relax my legs a whole lot more on that descent and then come into the run a bit more fresh.
All triathletes should be required, like exterior athletes, to have dropper post.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I'm just saying normally their skills aren't as high as like yours, John, and even John, a dropper post was
needed. Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Was helpful.
Yeah, and it's funny because you'd think that it would be helpful for like, oh, it's super technical and it'll help for the terrain, but I picked it because I figured it would make my legs fresher for the run. And that's like a really smart thing. Don't just like think of the bigger spectrum. And that's with mountain biking too. I remember Sophia saying like, I wanted to have a dropper post at Cape Epic just because that way it would make my back feel better. It wasn't that I couldn't ride the terrain. She was like, but they're long days. And I knew that it would make my back feel better. And then if I'm looking at day after day, that starts to add up and keep me more fresh. I thought that was really smart of her. So like a good way of thinking out of the box. T2, same thing with like my bike being smashed by a bunch of other bikes. I thought that it'd be easy to find. It was a little tricky to get through and get all this stuff, but T2 was decently quick. But I think the cramping was like you guys guessed. I think it was just not enough carbs because I hadn't, so my burn rate on the bike was higher than what I was accustomed to taking in with carbohydrate drink while training. And that was because recently I hadn't been training. I had a baby and I was not putting in a lot of time training. And I don't just sit there and drink 120 grams of an hour when I'm on the couch. You know, I just save that for when I'm on the bike. And then other than that, it's whole grains and a lot of carbohydrate in that regard, but not just sugar. So you have to train yourself. And I don't think I had taken that in and just not enough recent training. And I think that's why they cramp. Because I had done bricks after hard bike rides. And those bricks, I was able to run. The way I got my pacing wasn't just hopeful. The way I got my pacing was after feeling what it was like running on trails after doing something like that. But I just wasn't as prepared, you know, coming into it. So, and the reason that the results were different was because the online timing system was doing it on current age rather than racing age. And that's why the online timing was different than what they actually awarded for the race. So,
okay. Makes sense.
Yep.
You know, those A-frames we put your bike on. So you hit your tip of your saddle over. They're not high enough for my saddle height. So I can't
was thinking about that.
Yeah. So I'm like, I haven't done a mountain bike one, but, I have to put either a road bike or a TT bike on the other way. So my brakes kind of sit over it and then take it out the other way.
Oh, that's
like
clever.
A second, but I'm not really that. Clever, but just, yeah. You only have two choices. But yeah, that's annoying.
So. Can we talk about 2023 race plans with this then? So in the spring, I'm going to do a 70.3. I think I'm going to do 70.3 Oceanside. I was thinking of that, Texas or Puerto Rico, but I don't want to travel all the way down to, you know, the Caribbean. I think it'd just be, I mean, don't get me wrong, Caribbean sounds amazing. But it'd just be a lot of hassle, especially when our baby's, you know, like 8 months, nine months, like, you know, I don't want to be doing that. Oceanside's a really quick trip. Like it's a little over an hour flight and I'm there. And it'd be super
easy. You got to drive an hour, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
San Diego, then Oceanside. I've done Oceanside. It's amazing. The one thing to know is you swim in the ocean. At the first, you're in like a little like bay kind of area, and there's no it doesn't feel like you're in the ocean. And then when you get out past like the pier, there'll be waves. So just as you're swimming, you'll go up and down like a foot or two.
And they
like
changed at least the day that I did it. They changed it. Oh. So now what you do is you swim straight through the break first. You start out going that way and you have to swim through the break. And last year the waves were huge and it was gnarly and I watched it, and that's why I'm scared to do Oceanside because it was pretty rough. And then after that you make a turn around like a jetty and then you work your way into like a bay, it looks like. So, it was pretty rough. Like, there's some athletes that I know, they're really good athletes locally, Justin Clark, Rhonda Yeager, and they did it. And they said that it was a really hard swim, like pretty sketchy, but the conditions were really like exceptional. So anyways, I'm going to do 70.3 Oceanside. A couple of coworkers here are doing it with me too. It's going to be fun. We're going to go down there. It's going to be awesome. If you're
do,
yeah, go ahead.
4:41.26.
Whoa, I'm going to write that down. Somebody write that down, 4:41.26.
You're going to do really well because the swim on a half is less of an issue. A full, relative to the other distances, on a full, that's too long swimming for you. Mm-hmm. It's not that much longer than an Olympic swim.
Yeah, it's 230 meters longer than what we swam at Tahoe.
Yeah.
So.
And then on the bike, you're going to kill it. And there's even like a headwind section on the way back, and you're so aero, you'll kill that. Like there's a big climb, be fine. And then the run too is, you're a good runner, and I have like the, you're really good at long stuff. So I think you're going to excel on this part. So,
4:41.26. Nice. That's cool. So yeah, if you're doing it, let us know. It'd be fun to meet up with folks and just like we used to do back in Kona, good times. So we won't be at Kona this year. So, but 70.3 Oceanside, it's going to be a lot of fun. A single track six, I'm doing that in July. I'm so excited to do that again. I need to go back and get redemption. That is my dream race. It's like tailor-made for me. Incredible, technical, fun, fast, hard single track in cool places. And
which bike?
I think I'm going to switch to the Epic Evo instead of the Epic. Because I think 6 days in a row on rough trails, a bit of extra suspension would go a long way to helping just the small fatigue that you get, that you feel like in the middle of the race, but then it compounds. And by the end, you're super fatigued. So
which tires?
I think I'm going to run 2.4 Aspens still.
Okay. What John just said, unless you're John, don't do what he just said.
They're just so good. Though I might do the Recon race, the 2.4 Recon race, because that one gives me a bit more puncture protection. There's less just like casing. There's more knobs. So that could help with that. But I need to try them because I only tried the 2.3 version or 2.25, whatever it was before.
And
it
both
behaves totally differently than the 2.25, the 2.4, I guess. So
6 days, like you can pre-ride one of the sections the first day and do it.
Yeah.
You're going to do very well on that. That's exciting to see you do that and not get a concussion.
Yes, exactly. And Ivy wants to do it too.
Ooh,
that could be interesting, right?
She's gonna. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be
cool. Yeah. So anyways, really excited for it. Also, thanks to the event organizers. I signed up in 2019 for 2020. Because of COVID, they deferred to 2021. They deferred again to 2022 upon my request. And then I had a baby, no fault of their own. And they still said, hey, do you want to defer? We saw you're going to have a baby. I was like, wow. Well, you guys are amazing.
Do they know who you are?
So, I mean,
do
yes.
they know about like your
maybe
talk
that's
about
it?
The.
Yeah. Yeah. But still, that's really, really cool. Good on them for doing that. And I know a lot of other people that have, they're just good event organizers. And then Park City Point to Point. I've got unfinished business. I want to finish that race. Keegan said it was, in his words, it's harder than Leadville. Yeah. And they changed the course and it's 76 miles and GPS readings are really bad on it because you're constantly on single track and it's really tough to get anything accurate on that. But it sounds like it's around 13,000 feet of climbing in 76 miles. So that's going to be around Labor Day weekend next year. So that's what I'm going to do next year. I'm stoked for it. If you're going to do any of those races, let us know. Let us know what races you're going to do down in the comments that you can use Trainer Road to prepare for. I'm going to be following our half Ironman plan for 70.3. I'm going to do cross country marathon plan for single track six and Park City Point to Point. I've built it all out in calendar and I have it as, you know, stage race in there for single track six, the whole thing. It's really cool. So I'm excited.
This is how John and I talk just normally at work. Just yeah. Like, we haven't got to a single question.
I know.
What tires? Blah, blah, blah. What could you do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nate can I convince you? So I saw a picture of you recently. You're jacked. You're big. You're strong. I bet you would swim incredibly well. Can I convince you to do Ironman 70.3 with me, Oceanside?
No.
Come on.
I don't have the time. Because the amount of time that it takes, like weight training's, you know, 45 minutes. I'm good.
Yeah,
and I still, let's get workout level V2 out, red light, green light, AFTP detection, get all those things.
And then?
Awesome. Maybe, yeah. Like
the audience would love to see you go back and do a triathlon again, I bet.
Well, I would too, actually. Like the, John, give me the bug. Because...
I didn't bring this up until now, until you were on air, by the way, on purpose. So,
yeah, you know, low concussion. I'm still afraid. I don't want to get any more concussions. And of all the bike racing, triathlon's the
least best, likely, especially
least likely. And you have way more control too, is just not being aggressive in passing or big descents, you know, especially in disc brakes and all that sort of stuff. You can be very, cautious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe, John.
Ooh, if you're in the live chat or on YouTube or anywhere else and you want Nate to do triathlon again, see if we can peer pressure him into it in a healthy way, of course. That'd be good. Nate, let's get into some athlete questions. And then after that, we're going to look at one of our Trainer Road employees, Kent Main. He races for the Pro Touch team. It's a world or a pro continental team. And he raced the Maryland Cycling Classic against World Tour teams. We're going to look at what it took to race at that. But first things first, let's get into Liam's question. It says, Kia ora, Trainer Road crew. So from New Zealand, good stuff. Absolutely loving the updates and energy flowing from TR and the podcast of late. So good. I've gained so much motivation from following adaptive training and aiming for and surpassing a goal set with Nate's help earlier in the year. My question is a bit trivial in the scheme of things. Should I enter a cross-country eliminator race? So eliminators are typically like 90 seconds long. It's like four people start on a course. Typically they're in urban areas and it's just like a short, like little sprint skills course, basically. Used to be a bigger thing in Europe and it's not as common now. So should I enter an XCE race on Friday, on the Friday night, 2 days before my A race on a Sunday? The cross country eliminator is about 2 minutes long. It's an XC loop. And he says, I presume it'll be all out for 2 minutes. And then the A race is about a 6 hour cross country marathon race. I'm not expecting results from either, but want to support the event and organizer on the Friday and push myself to my very best on Sunday. I'm typically terrible at short efforts and have no snap. Will I risk being flat as a pancake on Sunday? Maybe 2 minutes might be the perfect opener. Also, I know you all are busy and as busy as busy gets, but please come to New Zealand for the Waka 100 in October. It's some of the best riding in the world. We can do it at whatever speed you like, and I'll keep you safe. We can do the 100 mile if you need to get more value for money. I'm not as fast as you guys, but we can cruise. Thanks. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you, Liam. Super kind. And I've heard we have been asked a lot of times to do the Waka 100. Maybe someday. Nate, what do you think about this? Like an all-out two-minute effort 2 days before your goal race, which is a cross-country marathon.
Yeah, it's not going to make you flat, like, or deplete a ton of glycogen. You'd obviously do a long warm up for this and then do it. The thing that I would worry about would be some sort of crash or something. But if you think that's not going to happen to stop your A race, I would go for it. And then that next day, just focus on carb loading 6 hours. I mean, as soon as you're done, I would have the recovery drink go in there. I would load for the day before too. You're going to use more carbohydrate being loaded for that 2 minute race than you normally would, but it's just 2 minutes. So you're going to be good. It's also a great, equipment check because you have all of the things are exactly ready for race. And then don't change anything on your bike between there, which I know we can all like, oh, I need a different tires. I mean, just do everything the same. Unless you know, I think you'll be fine doing everything the same. Yeah, I would totally do it. And it sounds fun. Yeah. What do you, John, you would do it 100%. You would do it.
Yeah, I would. The reason that I put this one in here is because we just saw world champs, Nino Schurter skipped short track, world champs 2 days before, cross country Olympic world champs. And quite a few athletes actually did that. And it's been kind of like a topic of discussion on the internet where people say, see these short, hard efforts, you know, in the same week as your goal race, they ruin you and you shouldn't do them. Nino skipped it. And that's why he did so well at cross country Olympic world champs and he won. But there's a lot of context that's just being assumed and misunderstood there. I feel like like, Nate, if you're coming in, first of all, hopefully you're not coming into it this way, but if you're coming into your goal event and you are exhausted, like you are to the limit, maybe life gave you a lot of unpredictable stress. Maybe you didn't follow your plan. You did too much extra coming into it. Then that 2-minute effort's not going to do a single beneficial thing for you if you're riding right on the edge. It's just not.
True.
Even though it's an only a 2-minute effort. And I think that when you're looking at athletes like the best in the world, like Pauline Ferrand-Prevot and Nino and all these other athletes, they are professionally paid to be on that line for that week. You know what I mean? Like, like they need to be there. So that's why they're being super careful about stepping over the edge in any way. For you in this case, I would think that it wouldn't be that way unless you're truly, truly fatigued. And I find a lot of benefit from doing just a really hard effort. You feel great after you do like when you do a really hard effort on the bike. And in this case, Liam's not used to it. So he'll probably get like really big power numbers that he hasn't done recently. That'll probably fill him with confidence, gas him up before he has a good cross country marathon race. So I vote to go ahead and do those efforts that are going to be, you know, 2 days before or something like that. It's not a big deal.
And there's the fun factor, right? So Nino wants to win world champs. Liam says, I'm not going for results. So let's say at most this 2-minute race takes out 30 seconds of a 6-hour race. Mm-hmm. Not a big deal. But for Nino, if it takes like 4 seconds out of him at a key spot, he's no longer world champion.
Yes.
And that's huge for his career. Like the amount of money and prestige is crazy. So yeah. Liam, you're going to do awesome. It's not going to prevent you from doing the 6-hour race at all. I think it's actually going to be beneficial to, I think the pros outweigh the cons, except if there's super technical for some type of crash. But just I think it also will loosen you up for the A race, right? Like that, like getting in that intensity and stuff, and you'll start your A race and be like, this is chill and more relaxed. All good things.
Agreed. Stuart has a question. I'm a time crunch dad here. I often train indoors on limited time. Yeah. What's up, bro? But if I was lucky enough to get a 3-hour window of free time, this is a great question. Is it better to ride every minute of the 3 hours or cut it short and get some legs uptime with that 3 hours of free time that I have? Thanks for your time from Stuart. This is a good question.
And it's dependent on what you've previously done, what your volume is, and what you're doing the next few days. Because have you ever done this where you're going into a vacation and you like, you're like,
you pack
training camp day. I'm doing Leadville the day before. It can make that next day vacation, especially if you wake up early for a flight, hard. But I think that's a very valid strategy, is you are going to put yourself lower hold than normal because you know you're going to have more recovery than normal. So if on this one, I mean, this is too, Stuart. This is a trial and error thing. If you've never tried it, I would try it once and see how you feel the next day. Can you still be a good dad? Do your responsibilities? You probably will be more tired than usual, but is it okay? Also, though, I wouldn't push it if, you know, being a parent is rough. And if you are coming into that that ride and you wake up and you're like dreading it, I think that's the key thing is like, you wake up at those rides, John, and your motivation, you're like, you can't wait. The alarm goes off at like 6:30. You're like, let's go.
Yeah.
And other times the alarm goes off and you're like, oh gosh, why did I say I would be there at 7?
Yes.
This is horrible.
100%.
If you have that, Stuart, maybe you cut that down to an easy 1 hour or something. And then you get the legs up time the other part of it.
Yeah. This is not considered enough by all of us cyclists that maybe you might actually get faster if you filled your free time with a mix of training and recovery. Like we talk about this during recovery weeks, all the energy that you typically put into training, put that into recovery, put that into preparing really good, clean, fun meals that you like to prepare where you get like really good food. Like if you put all the energy,
any of those? I was just thinking I need some more of those. Do you have any tips? We're going off track, but
yeah.
It's just us two. Yeah. What are the best like clean meals that you're preparing right now?
Yeah. So one thing that I like to do is you can get, and Nate actually tipped me off to this quite a while ago. And ever since then, I've kind of been a convert to it. But frozen vegetables are not bad. Frozen vegetables, actually, in many cases, I believe it's been shown that they actually, in some cases, have more nutritional value than something that's just transferred to the store and sat on the shelves.
It gets locked in right away with the freezing process.
Yeah, which is cool. So freezing vegetables or getting freeze bags of vegetables, super helpful. Mm-hmm. I throw those in the air fryer or the broiler. one of the two, and then like oil and sea salt, and that like a little bit of
which
olive
vegetables?
Oil. Yeah, so sweet potatoes, I love doing. You can get those in like
bags.
You get
frozen ones.
Yeah, you can get frozen ones. Yeah, they're harder to find, but you can find them. Then I'll get usually like a mix. So I'll get something like broccoli, cauliflower. I'll even throw in like normal like russet potatoes or anything else like that too. Brown rice is a great one to have, quinoa, and then greens. And what I do is I'll take all that stuff minus the greens, and I will put that in a big like baking sheet. Or I'll put that in the air fryer, and all I do is
quinoa
just,
too.
Yeah, no quinoa.
The quinoa
no.
You cook.
Quinoa, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'll take that and I'll throw it into an air fryer, and then I'll throw in just the basic stuff of salt, pepper, garlic, and some olive oil, and then I keep all those things in the fridge. And then after that, I'll have like brown rice made, quinoa, anything like that, and then I throw it into a bowl. And then after I throw it into the bowl, I usually cook some type of meat as well. And then I'll put it together. So right now, one of my favorite ones is I have sweet potato, black beans, which the black beans, by the way, when I cook them with a bit of lemon juice. And then I throw in a touch of hot sauce into it. And they're really good.
When you say cook them, do you mean open the can? Or do you actually cook black beans?
No, I actually cook. So I take them from the can. Whoa. And then you throw them in, and it gives them a much better texture. You don't cook them for long.
Oh,
so
do you put them in the hash dish or something separate?
Yeah, I throw them into the hash dish. It's amazing.
Oh, wow. So on a cookie sheet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Good. I've never done that.
Gives it better texture. So
it's my lunch now.
Yeah. Okay, continue. So I do that, and then I'll throw in the veggies, and then I'll throw in some sauce with whatever meat that I have. And then it's like that way I can have, if I have like 9 different ingredients that I put into a bowl, that gives me an opportunity to be able to vary that and change it and get some variety in there over the course of the week. So when you are putting all of your gas into training, like all the energy that you have into training, and sometimes that's what's required, and we have a really busy life too. We feel like all the spare, anything that's left is just going toward getting me through my training. When you're in your recovery week, take all that energy and put it toward recovering. It's going to give you a really good return on investment. You're going to feel more recovered. And when you put it toward things like really good meals, that's going to make you feel fantastic too. And I think that there's too often where we just compartmentalize it, and we think all of our will and our eagerness and our strength and our focus, we're good with putting that into training. But then when it's recovery time, we don't know what to do. So we just sit there, and then we don't end up recovering as well as we could.
Yeah. And it's not just physical, but mental. We just talked about this. I struggle with it still. It just happened on Monday. I was totally trashed, so tired. But I felt guilty the whole time because I had a list of like 45 things to do, and I would do a little bit, and I wouldn't fully like rest because I'd feel guilty, but then I wouldn't fully get things done, or I'd just get one thing done. And the whole day was kind of just like shot inside of that. And it's something I need to understand, that like tell myself it is okay to do stuff. But it's hard because even people at Trainer Road, I have things that help other people do things, and I need to get those things done. But you know, everybody needs to recover some too.
It's true. It's a struggle, like an eternal struggle, I feel like.
Eternal struggle, especially with like type A people, right? Like, because you always want to get things done. Your quinoa, how do you cook your quinoa? I'm going back to food.
Yeah, I do it easy. There's like quinoa packets that I get where you can microwave, or you can put it into like basically like a normal cook pot and do it that way. But I typically just go with the microwave packets. It's just like a minute rice, that sort of stuff. Like when you can just like put it in there and open it up, easy. It's super easy. Yeah.
Do you do that with your brown rice too? Or do you like a rice cooker?
The brown rice I've got brown rice with those minute packets, and it's not as good as when you take the brown rice and you put it into like something big and you put it in the oven and you let it cook for a long time. It's definitely better, but honestly, it sounds bad, but that small difference in flavor and like an enjoyment that way, maybe it's 5 to 10% difference. It requires a whole lot more time. And for me, the time is more valuable than 5 to 10% difference in flavor and like that sort of thing. So I typically err on the side of convenience rather than something else. And that's something I've had to learn, because for some reason I felt like, and probably other people too, oh, if I'm going to eat healthy, I need to put in a huge amount of time, and it needs to be hard to prepare it, and it needs to be involved. And convenience has a real value, because if there's barriers to stopping us from eating healthy like that,
you don't do it.
Any barrier is enough, right? Even a small one.
Yeah. That's what they call it. I've read too about the ADHD tax, and they say, buy your food pre-prepared as much as you can, or else because it's a little more expensive to buy like cut up fruit, or else it just sits in your fridge and goes bad. Mm-hmm. So the frozen vegetable thing for people who have problems, you know, where the food goes bad, that's amazing. For what I hear you're saying is you open a bag, you spread it on a cookie sheet, you microwave some quinoa, and then you cook some meat on the side and you put it in. And you can actually buy pre cooked meat.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. Like Trader Joe's in the US has pre cooked like chicken that you put that in the air fryer. That's delicious.
Yeah.
Two with the rice. If, you know, I find that white rice tastes better than brown rice. And with my kids, I cook, they won't eat brown rice. I cook white rice. But if you mix it with the veggies too, and you get all that other fiber in there, like the amount of difference in fiber between brown and white is very small. I know there's other stuff like the in brown rice that are beneficial, but if it's going to make you actually eat it and not, you know, Uber Eats McDonald's or something, that is, it's okay, right, to eat some white rice, especially if you put it in a whole bunch of veggies. Totally. My question is, John, this is what I struggle with is meats. How do you keep your meats? What do you do with that? Because like fresh meats, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they're more than 5 days old, they get grossed out.
We used to cook a bunch of meat and then just like eat it throughout the week. And after 2 days, I find like doesn't taste good. Like, so we cook small amounts, and we usually, like, the way that we do it is we have either brines or marinades, and we'll toss, because once again, that makes it pretty easy because it's taking care of the seasoning for you. So a brine or a marinade. And then when we get it from the grocery store, we'll throw in chicken, throw in steak, whatever it is. And
like in a Ziploc bag or like a
Ziploc bag. Yep. Or in a container, like a Tupperware. And then you put it in the fridge and then you let it sit for usually somewhere like 24 hours. And then after that, when it's in the fridge, then we go out and we cook it. And so we usually only cook like 2 days of meat at a time. I know somebody's going to be like, I meal prep and I do everything for a week. But for us, that's what we found works best, because otherwise it just tastes bad. And
yeah.
And if you're also, if you're eating something, you've meal prepped, you've done all this stuff, but you're eating stuff that's kind of starting to go bad and it's causing GI distress, that's probably compromising your ability to get a lot of nutritional value from the food that you're eating anyway. So it's kind of flying in the face of the whole point of what you're trying to do. So I err on the side
what
of freshness.
What meats do you do?
You know, what, I like, what yeah. So one thing that I love is if you use a brine or a marinade, you can buy really low quality steak and it tastes amazing. Like, and it doesn't have to break
what
the
kind
bank.
Of steak?
So like, if you want to go for something that's like flank steak, that would be really expensive, skirt steak, and really nice and flavorful. You can get the same thing when you go and get a top sirloin steak and you just run it through a brine or a marinade for 24 hours and you let it sit in there and then you chop it up. And then it's like crazy how cheap it is, relatively speaking, and it still tastes delicious.
Okay. So what John said is not true, but it's not going to taste the same the meat people come after you, but yeah, it tastes good.
You're not eating it as a steak, right? You're eating this chopped up into small pieces that it's going into a bowl with a bunch of other things. And in that context, it's really hard to tell like the difference between the two. Like it's still perfectly good. And it'll still be good because of all the marinade and brine, whatever you do.
Vegans and vegetarians, you know, lentils, beans, tofu. I just want to make sure we don't forget about those people. Totally. The same strategy can be used with that. Frozen meats, like frozen chicken breast with that same strategy where you could then put the frozen in, like in a bag or in a container and then do it. That sounds amazing. I don't know. I get grossed out with meat a lot.
Sorry. Yeah. And we'll move on from food, but a silly, a small tip that goes a long way, because sometimes you think I really want to eat healthy. And then you go and look and all the meat is frozen and it's in the freezer and you're like, gosh, what do I do? To thaw meat really quickly, you actually don't have to. So don't put it in a pan. Don't microwave it. Don't do anything like that. No.
Gross.
Instead, get a bowl of water. And then what you have to do is you just have to have water circulating in that bowl. So we have like a, you could use like a sous vide cooker to circulate it and not even cook it, just to circulate it. Or you can just like leave water on for short periods of time, and just water circulating by that meat will pull away all the cold. It doesn't have to be super hot. You can do room temperature water and it thaws it super fast. So you can take like a pretty, like not a roast, but like a steak that's frozen, and you can throw it in there, and within like 10 to 15 minutes, it will be thawed out if you have circulating water running over it the whole time. It's a really great tip that makes it so that you salvage that healthy meal you were trying to make. So
I do this with my seafood. I have a big stainless steel bowl, and I don't have to run it through actually, and seafood defrosts really fast, but all like, unless you're somewhere crazy, just about all the fish you're getting or in seafood is frozen anyways. And if you buy it like fresh at the store, like shrimp, it's just they've thawed the shrimp for you.
Yeah, they thawed it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So getting that is one thing. Shrimp and I have salmon in individual packets. So you can put suction like sealed packet. You can put that in the water and then you don't have to worry about contamination or because that's something like chicken. You have salmonella and stuff like that. You can let it in there. It thaws really fast. Probably takes maybe 10 minutes at most. And then you can cook the salmon. And then cutting that salmon up in that hash sounds very delicious.
Yeah, we do. So Simon and I go fishing quite a lot and we get our own trout. So all forms of trout in the rivers, then lake trout, and then also salmon up here in Tahoe and around the different area. And then we vacuum seal it and cut up all the fillets. And then that way we just have that stuff. It's pretty sweet. It's a good way to do it. So
dad, son,
it's good fun. It's good fun.
In my single man house, I have a pantry. I should take a picture and put on Instagram, tier.nate. I think I will today, but I look, someone early on this podcast said I look like a sociopath. This will make you think I am a sociopath, but I want to explain this before I, most people see it. It is, the more I learn about ADHD, and this is so true that if something is out of sight, I don't remember it. Mm-hmm. And so if I have like a pantry where there's like food behind food, it'll be like 2 years. I'll be like, whoa, something's back there. Same with the fridge. So I built my pantry so everything is presented in a very efficient way, or not efficient way, a very clear way, so I can do it. But I'll put one up on after this. It's interesting, but it's, I love it.
tr.nate, go check it out. This has been a fun podcast. This is the Nate and Jonathan. Like Nate said, these are the discussions we have. All right, Nate, this next one I feel like is really appropriate for you. From Brian. He says, big fan of the podcast and the Trainer Road platform. I'm especially loving the variety while Jonathan is on parental leave. This question is somewhat targeted at Nate, as I know he recently went through a divorce, but I welcome feedback from any of the hosts. Excuse me. I'm currently going through a divorce and will end up with 50-50 custody of my three children on an alternating week schedule. Pre-kids, I was extremely active and put in huge training hours for Ironman and marathon, but with kids, I've been unable to dedicate much time to train, mainly due to my own guilt about me time. Mm-hmm. I'm working with a therapist on that and general emotional issues from the divorce, but I now will have plenty of time to train on alternating weeks. My question is, how do I structure this and what Trainer Road tools can I use to help? On weeks I have the kids, my cycling time is probably limited to 30 minutes, three times a week. On weeks I'm solo, I can put in much longer efforts. So how do I structure this? Long endurance rides 1 week with short intense rides the weeks with kids. How do I use Plan Builder and adaptive training best for this sort of scenario? I don't have any particular cycling goals right now. Just getting fitness back and being able to keep up with friends on rides would be great. So thanks for any advice that you have.
It's very interesting. And I see there's a few different ways you can go on this. And I feel your pain too about, you want to spend as, if you have your kids half time, you want to spend as much of that with them. You don't want to be like, hey, see you later. I'm going to be in the garage for 2 hours doing this ride. Go have fun with your iPad. Mm-hmm. This is tough. It's going to be depending on how you can recover and stuff like that. But I would have that regular week. I would try that to just be a regular Trainer Road week. Those are intense enough. And then on those three times a week, I would either do we have workout alternates. So whatever that workout is, try to do the 30-minute version of it. Or if you're tired, just do a 30-minute recovery ride. And then the next week, go back to the regular plan. I would do that. And then if you find that that's too little, then use workout alternates again and choose that the week that you're on, instead of doing an hour ride, try an hour 15, try an hour 30. Mm-hmm. And so the week with the kids is always going to be the same. At most, it's going to be 3 30-minute sessions, which isn't that much if you have some volume in your history. And then the other one, you're going to be adjusting yourself with that feature to see what is the recoverable volume for you so that you don't have the days be impacted. What I wouldn't do is just do a whole bunch of long rides for that 1 week and then three intense short rides. That's probably not going to get you the best bang for your buck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you will get faster on that too, but probably not the best for your bang for your buck. And you also don't want to have the kids come in like you did a training camp, and the first day you were tired, probably a little hangry, and not able to have as much patience as you would. mm-hmm. right? Because they're happy to see you, and you want to come in with maybe a recovery day before that, so you're fresh too.
Yeah,
I don't know absolutely. What age they are. If they're 17, they might like.
I'd be like, Dad, later, I don't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Can you go train, please? I want to be alone.
Yeah, Brian, training camp. Brian, mm-hmm. you mentioned that you don't have any specific cycling goals and you just want to keep up with friends. So one way you can do this too, because if a training plan adds like additional stress to you, like I need to stick to the plan, you could do train now and then also just do workout alternates. So then that way, like on when you have the kids, train now is fantastic for that because you can do 30 minutes and then when you set that 30 minutes, you could say it'll give you that chance to do an attacking, a climbing, or an endurance ride. And you can pick based on how you feel and what you need that day. And then on the longer week, what you could do is you could just look at workouts that coincide with your levels or do train now, but just extend the durations a bit longer. And I only say that because you don't have any like specific goal you're working toward. If you had an event on the calendar, I would push you toward a plan. But maybe in this case, this is a good opportunity for train now. Because it really seems like training is the balance for you right now. Like you want to keep up with friends and do that sort of stuff, but it's really like to give you time and also to achieve the balance that you need.
And train now, you don't have to use the workout alternates. There's just a little drop down to choose the duration. And then one other thing you said is, you know, someone might have said a 30 minute endurance. Basically a 30 minute endurance turns into a recovery ride, right? Yep. An easy ride, depending on the thing. So just want to make sure
that's not useless. Like that's like, sometimes that's exactly what you need, you know?
This will go back to the question with, I believe, who was it? Stuart, the time on the bike, watching TV on that easy day, whew, talk about like refresh because you get to zone out and have some time and you're getting productive. So those who have to be productive, it's like you're double productive. And, a tip is on Apple TV, there is Blackbird. It's a little dark. It's, I don't know if you'd like it, John, you don't like dark stuff, but
I don't. Yeah.
yeah. That is, maybe read something about it, but if you do like darker stuff, it's a good show. Very you're like hooked. Suspenseful. Nice. I just finished it last night. So
good stuff. All right. So we're going to end off here. People are liking this episode, Nate, with you and I. Interesting. Okay. TR employee Kent Main. So Kent's from South Africa. He's amazing. He won a stage at the Tour of Rwanda. So Kent's legit. He's very, very fast. To give you an idea, 5.82 watts per kilogram, 390 watt FTP at 67 kilograms or 147 pounds. So Kent is really fast. I am going to probably break everything and I'm going to try to share my screen so you can see Kent's ride.
I'll let you know how it goes on YouTube.
Great. Sounds good, Nate. First, I'm going to mention some stats. This race was 4 hours and 46 minutes long. It was a UCI World Tour race. So we had Trek, Segafredo, there was Movistar, there was like all the big, like there were big teams there, right? Israel Premier Tech and I think EF maybe, I can't remember, but big teams. The distance, it was 123 miles or 197 kilometers. It climbed 8,427 feet or 2,568 meters. Kent's average speed was 25.9 miles an hour or 41.7 kilometers per hour. That's quick, especially considering the fact that Kent didn't win. He rolled in 33rd place, 10 minutes down in the third group, yet it was still 26 mile an hour race. That's fast. So his top speed was 56 miles per hour or 90 kilometers per hour. His power, 319 normalized, 260 average power. Talk about a big difference there, right?
Wow.
So super surgy and 1,084 watt max power. So keep in mind, that's 319 NP for almost 5 hours. And he weighs 67 kilograms or 147 pounds, 320 TSS. He had an IF or intensity factor of 0.82. He burned nearly 4,500 kilojoules. So with all that in mind, that's a pretty big effort. Let's see if this works. I think that people can still hear us and I think that people can hopefully see Kent's ride here on screen. So I want to share a handful of things and you can see the ride here and you can see the stats, but I want to share like a few observations that I had from this one. So first of all, if you look at the first like 30 minutes of Kent's ride, which I'm going to try to like highlight for us here, 30 minutes and he's at almost 400 watts normalized power for the first 30 minutes. Nate, people are always saying that the road racing starts out easy and like they like get into it later. But look at this, like 300 or almost 400 watts for the first 30 minutes.
That's probably because it's a huge race and they want to drop people off so they can't hang on.
It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard about Keegan doing this in gravel races too, where they don't want people to hang on. Actually, even on Unbound too, I believe.
Yeah. And this is, Kent said he was trying to make it in the breakaway. And so keep this in mind, 400 watts for 30 minutes weighing 147 pounds is not enough to make it in the break. like, cause he didn't make it in the break, but that's how much power he was putting out. Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm confused too. I was thinking that this is not a actual road race. I was thinking this is more like a gravel race. So
full road,
it's breakaway. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Full road race, but insane thinking of that. Like there's that shows that they're at an entirely different level. After the first 80 minutes at 330 watts normalized for 80 minutes, which is nearly 5 watts per kilogram, then it like ceased to chill. So if you look at this in his power profile, you can see right here is the chill moment of the race. It's after like, you know, 80 minutes of racing and it's pretty easy. That must be when the break got away and the field was like, all right, we're going to relax for a little bit. But typically that lasts for more than 15 minutes. It was only 15 minutes. After that, there was no more chill for the rest of the race. It was punchy and surgy and super hard, which is pretty crazy when you think about that. So When you look at the watt kg that he ended up putting out for like the whole race, it's nuts. Like for his 60 minute power, 352 watts normalized power. And I'll show you that on the PR chart here, but for those that are joining us on YouTube, you can see this stuff. But for his best 1 hour power, 304 watts there, but it's actually 352 watts normalized. Ooh. Which is nuts for an hour.
At 147. Yeah. I mean, nuts for anyone at any weight. At my weight, 200 pounds, that's nuts.
20 minute power, normalized power of 425 watts, an average of 338. And then if you look at his 10 minute power, isn't too much higher there, 459 watts and 398 watts average for 10 minutes, still insane. But then like you look at the 5 minute power, this is just nuts. 512 watts for 5 minutes is what he had to put out normalized. That's really hard.
John, you remember the days where you're one of the top dogs at Trina Road?
Yeah, those days are over.
Amber and Brandon were the only ones like, but now you're not even the best mountain biker. Like,
not even remotely close.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just crazy how fast he is. So some other interesting observations too. 10% of his time was spent coasting. 58% of his time, and you can see this here, 58% of his time was spent somewhere in endurance, so like active recovery and endurance and below that. If you look at tempo sweet spot, 18% of his time and 24% of his time was spent at or above threshold in this race. And if you look at it, that was never accumulated in any sort of significant like sustained effort. It was constant punches. And the interesting part is like the key ability that I see here is being able to repeat 30 to 60 second efforts that are between 120 to 150%. So VO2 to anaerobic, being able to repeat those for like 15 to 20 minute chunks with very limited rest. In other words, for this rolling road race and what you see in our rolling road race plan, it has you doing these micro bursts and these 30 30s in addition to doing a whole lot of different things that you'll do, like, you know, but it hits on those needs. And this is the definition of a rolling road race right here. So it's pretty cool to see. So that was like a key thing that he had to do. But also something else that's interesting, if you look at, I'm going to try to zoom in here so maybe we can see a good example of it. When you look at the climbs and you can see the elevation there, when you look at the climbs, the bottom of the climbs, the gas was almost always on. The climb, it stayed decently hard, but it was after the climbs in a lot of cases where the surges really, really hit. This backs up what pro riders and what Chad and what you and what we've all talked about, what Amber has told us on the podcast, is that don't be the sort of person that just pushes to the climb. Be the sort of person that's pushing beyond the climb and after the climb. And that's where like a lot of the difference is made. And Kent's race there backs it up. So Kent's one of many very fast employees here at Trainer Road. And it's super impressive. Way to go, Kent. And exciting stuff. I'd love to see Kent get picked up by a world tour team. He absolutely has the chops to do that. Although that might mean that he doesn't work for us anymore, which would be sad because he might not have any time. But hopefully he still does. So pretty cool.
This is a good example, too, of a ride that is looking at the progression level numbers. And I want to tell them out specifically here. But they're not as high as you would think for this huge, huge effort. Like you're like, oh, he must have gotten all 10s or something like that. And it is the, again, the there's hard moments that were not strung. Like it wasn't like an interval where it's like mm-hmm. 3 minutes on, 3 minutes rest, 3 minutes on. It was probably a big effort and then a lot of rest. And even the endurance stuff, there's a lot of, there's, you said there's a lot of coasting, which is true in a road race too. Ken wants to do as least work as possible. So you're always hiding. You're always trying to soft pedal. And you think, well, wow, it's, you know, 200 kilometers. You must have a bit of endurance, but really like you're trying yeah. not to, right? Which is, I mean, I think you should be proud actually, if in a race you do well and you do get low progression levels, because that means you raced, efficiently. And I think Pete's yep. talked about this too, of like he would with the other Cliff Bar riders, who has the most time at 0 watts in a crit where they all mm-hmm. stay together. That really shows you who rode the most efficiently in there and still gets, you know, some kind of result. You don't want to be last sure. place.
yeah. Easy to get the most time coasting then.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. So it's super interesting to see. And I'm excited to see more. Maybe we can get Mateo to share some race files with us too. It'd be great to see, which get well soon to Mateo too. He went to Tour of Britain ready to fire, and then, he got food poisoning and he got taken out of the race, which is a bummer. So, but just the same, Nate, this has been a fun episode, different episode. Hopefully people enjoyed it. You can send your questions in trainerroad.com/podcast. And if you're not to subscribe to Trainer Road, you got to try it. It's the time to do it right now. Sign up, get started with your training, build out your training plan, get excited about it and start executing on it and get a strong base built up for next year. So then you can have the best races you've had, best rides, best fitness, whatever you're going for. It'll be exciting stuff. We'll talk to you all next time. Thanks, Nate.
Bye-bye.